Good afternoon. You are listening to KTOO in Juneau at 104.3. Today on a Juneau afternoon, we'll continue our series, Words 101, with a conversation on how to read with librarians Julie Niederhauser, Andy Hirsch, and MJ Grande. We'll talk with Celia Jackson from the American Red Cross about an upcoming class on disaster preparedness. James Hoagland from the 4As will be here with details about Saturday's National HIV Testing Day. We'll talk with Clinton Singletary about senior sales tax exemption cards, and we'll hear about art happenings in Juneau during Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon, live at 3, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available online at k2.org. Be sure to tune in tonight at 7 for a broadcast of last September's Mudrooms event. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two tribal officials call on U.S. senators to help with long-term solutions to address youth suicide. The leaders gave testimony at a Senate Committee on Indian Affairs hearing Wednesday. The discussion started with troubling stories and statistics. Native American youth commit suicide twice the rate of their non-Native peers. Some communities deal with daily attempts and suicide clusters. The Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota reported in the last 6 months it suffered from 14 suicides and hundreds of attempts. Oglala Sioux Tribal Council member C.J. Clifford says when they lose one child, it hurts the spirit and soul of their people. Clifford told the committee the tribe's biggest challenge is to combat the hopelessness and the growing normalcy of suicide, where some children speak openly about methods at school and on social media.
This year, one of the youth pastors on our reservation received a tip that would be a group suicide that day. He sped to the site and found ropes hanging from the trees. Thankfully, no one had hanged themselves, but youth had begun to gather. This intervention saved them at this time. Feeling of hopelessness are compounded by the reality of living on a Pine Ridge. Our poverty rate is more than 50%. Our unemployment is above 70%. 60% of our students do not graduate high school. Life expectancy is around 50 years of age, compared to the U.S. average of 79 years. Our children carry an ominous outlook that things may not get better for them, that they are destined to suffer the same history and injustice as their ancestors, as our ancestors.
Red Lake Chairman Daryl Secchi says his Minnesota tribe is also experiencing high numbers.
Last year, Red Lake suffered 4 youth suicide, 2 girls, 2 boys. This year, we already have lost 2 more kids to suicide, including a 9-year-old boy just a few weeks ago. Over the last year of school at Red Lake, there were more than 75 cases of suicide ideation. School wellness counselor intervention resulted in more than 40 students being placed under protective watch, sent to appropriate medical facilities for care.
Both tribal officials say they need long-term resources and funding to address youth suicide. Secchi added that school counselors are making a difference, but says the tribe is not able to reach all who need help due to staff reductions and sequestration to healthcare centers. Lawmakers pledged to keep focus on the issue, including Wyoming Senator John Barrasso, chair of the committee, who says the committee will do what it can legislatively and in the oversight capacity to see results. An Indian healthcare official and an educator also testified at the hearing in Washington. The new leader of the Aleutic Museum in Alaska says leadership roles are often combined in the community. It's common to see familiar faces transfer from one organization to another. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
As the Aleutic Museum's new executive director, April Lactonen Counselor, explains it, many of Kodiak's different groups brush shoulders at one time or another. Lactonen Counselor says nonprofit organizations, Native corporations, and educational institutions in Kodiak are interconnected. In fact, she was an instructor of Aleutic language and Alaska Native Studies at Kodiak College before accepting her current position at the Aleutic Museum.
My very first day at work, I didn't even make it to the museum because we were running a summit, which was actually out at Kodiak College. So there's a lot of overlap with the work because of the collaborations that we do in our community.
Lactonen Counselor is originally from the Kodiak Island community of Larsen Bay and has been influential in the learning of Aleutic language. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at uttc.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You are tuned in to a Juneau Afternoon. The time is 6 minutes past the hour. This is Cheryl Snyder. I'm your host for today. Joining me now is Julie Niederhauser, the Public Library Coordinator for the State of Alaska, as well as Andy Hirsch and MJ Grande, who are librarians here in town. They're here as part of our series we're doing called Words 101, which explores many aspects of writing and reading. So welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
We're thrilled to be here. Thanks, Cheryl.
Yeah. So today we are discussing the topic how to read. And I thought it would be first fun to just start with a conversation about why you think reading is important. So, MJ, we'll start with you.
I think reading is important because it opens your mind and your experience to the entire world. That some people have to have immediate experiences in order to learn. Some people are able to read something on a page and believe that they have lived it. And for people who don't have the resources or can, like, explore everything, everybody can explore the world thoughts through reading.
Okay, Julie Niederhauser, what do you think? Why is reading important?
I absolutely agree with what MJ just said. I think that reading allows us to experience things outside of our own limited experiences, but also allows us to be other things. We get to experience what it would be like to live in a war-torn environment, or to be a scientist, or to help us answer those questions that we are always trying to find an answer to ponder things that we don't understand. It helps us to transform who we are, who we want to be. I just think it's something I couldn't imagine living without.
Okay, Andy Hirsch, do you have some thoughts?
Well, I'm here with the, like, super smart people, so I'll try. And for me, I'm going to say, start with stories are important. And they're important on a personal level, which is what MJ and Julie just talked about, and how they change us. But they're also important on a social level, and it's how do we connect with each other. And I think one of the benefits of reading is there is a story that is created, and everybody can connect with it. You can connect with it, and I can connect with it, and sometimes people are able to connect with each other about this third thing that exists. And I think that is so awesome, and that stories are just so powerful because we get to learn and know, but we also get to make connections with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, Andy, you just articulated a little bit what I was thinking about, that, you know, certainly reading exposes us to the world at large, but I also think that it's really important just in our own self-exploration and learning to understand ourselves better, and then how we fit into community. So, yeah, interesting. So what are your recommendations? How do you find a good book? How do you go about finding a good book? MJ, I'm looking at you.
Well, talking to other people is a really excellent, excellent place. Of course, the librarians, we've been in business for a zillion years in readers advisory. So between everybody that works at the library tends to be readers. So engaging people that are hanging out with books, or bookstore workers, hanging out with people that hang out with books is a great place to start. And asking questions, what have you ever enjoyed before? Who are those authors? What types of things? Just kind of researching what's brought you pleasure before, and that gives you a foundation for moving on. And again, it's kind of back to, I think a lot of books are best mediated, and whether it's through a person or through a reader's list, you know, there you can find zillions of lists. I did bring a book today, The Novel Cure, which is a book of 751 books that are, you can look up homelessness, books about homelessness or homesickness or lovesickness or lust or and they give what the reading elements are. For example, overwhelmed by the number of books in your house, the cure is to cull your library. Hardly anybody knows how to do that. However, the Friends of Juneau Public Library is an excellent place should you be able to call.
Terrific. And are there resources online? What are some of your favorite online places to find out what's a, you know, I want a really good novel to read for this summer. Where do you go?
Want to talk Novelist?
Sure. Novelist is great, but there's other choices as well. There's a lot of great lists of the best books, award-winning books. Choice has current reviews for academic libraries, but there's a book list online, Kirkus Reviews, Library Journal, New York Times Sunday book review. They write some of the best book reviews ever. So there's lots of wonderful resources that are online. But if you're familiar with Novelist,
I can talk about that. The library also has a database, which is called Novelist or Novelist Plus, and you go in and you say, okay, I really liked this book, and it breaks down all of these traits. This book was fast-paced or action-packed or character-driven or dialogue-driven, and you kind of mark all the things that you really liked about a book, and then you hit go, and it brings up all the other books that have the same characteristics that you like. And so that's a great resource. One of the other ways that I find a book I like is once, and this is kind of circular, once I have a book I like, I say, oh, author, what books do you like? Because I feel like I'm friends with the author after I read a really good book. I'm like, oh, this person, we connected on this book. I love them so much. What other books do they like? So if they have blogs or have do book recommendations, those are things that I look for.
So, yeah, it's a great idea to find out what the authors you like, what are they reading.
Right, yeah. And I also think book clubs are a great place. And again, talking to other people about books, oftentimes authors are interviewed, so you can go online and see those. And so there's just a myriad ways to find wonderful books. You guys have, even Capital City Weekly has book reviews listed there, so it's a great way to find a great book.
Great. And what about for children? Is there a special approach you take for new readers or young readers on helping them get set up with something they're going to fall in love with?
Samples. A lot of samples. And I kind of call it bait, where you kind of just pull out a whole variety of things. Some of the real early go-tos are Mo Willems. He started out writing for Sesame Street and really gets kids. And then he had his own child, and so he started writing, you might know the book Knuffle Bunny. That's his daughter's first words and first, so he wrote this book about his family, and he's really grown in lots of ways. He's translated his knowledge of humans and kids into this series about a piggy and an elephant, Gerald. And they are perfect early readers because the dialogue is very simple, it's color-coded, but the interactions they have are human interactions. You know, it's my friends invited to a party, do I get to go? How to share? And they're about empathy, and they're humorous, and you've got the really highly dramatic friend and the really stay calm kind of a friend. And that's a great, very beginning reader start. And so one of the other ways that kids find books is being read to, so that they have it in their ear. What do stories sound like? What's the language of literacy? And just feeding book after book after book after book after book so that their brains are full of both language in the words, but also the way words fit together and the way a story grows and evolves. So just tons of reading, and what you like, your kids are going to like for a while.
And then they get
their own opinions.
And I think it's really important also just to demonstrate reading in a home. I mean, the more the children watch their own parents enjoy reading, you know, reading aloud to your kid, you can't stress how important that is.
Okay, great. So I had someone before our conversation today specifically ask me to ask you guys a question, which is when you are reading, when you find your mind wandering other places, what are some tricks for pulling yourself back in?
I've been stewing on this question because I sort of believe that if a book doesn't grab your attention, it doesn't deserve your attention. And so put that book down and go find something else. There is so much out there that I think that if you don't want to give it your attention, find something that deserves your time and attention. Kate DiCamillo was here, the Newbery author, and we had a great visit with her. And she was talking about the difference of writing for kids and writing for adults. And she said, adults, you know, they will maybe give you 50 or 100 pages in order to see where you're going, what you're going to do. And kids writing, they give you one page. And if you have not caught their attention and deserve their attention, then you're lost. And I really like that. You know, there was some people say, well, read something your age number before you put it down. You know, give it that many number of pages before you stop. And I'm like, I go with Kate. The first page, I don't like it. Although book groups is a whole different thing. You know, that's reading for a whole different reason.
Right. That compels you to keep getting through. Well,
yeah.
I think maybe we have another good subject for our series, Writing 101, is Words 101 is directed towards authors. When you're writing, how do you hold your reader's attention?
And you know, you may approach a book and at a certain period of time, it just, you can't get into it. And then months later or maybe years later, you'll come back to it and you're at a different place and you can approach that topic and really enjoy it and get something out of it. Oftentimes, as I mentioned, earlier, that sometimes if I'm reading a book and I may disagree with the author, if it's my book, I will write in the margins or I'll highlight sections and I'll actually have that conversation. It's my personal book. I'm a librarian. It's active reading, you guys. Okay. And I will actually, argue or, you know, like.
Don't do that to the library.
No, not the library.
Yeah,
but
please.
I do think it's important, you know, to actually, you know, to think about what you're reading and whether you agree with it or not, because.
I appreciate what you're saying there. It's just funny to see the reaction of our librarians in the studio here. So book clubs, you have mentioned book clubs. For those who are interested in either joining an existing book club or starting one themselves, what can you offer them?
I have some advice for starting a book club. And there's a couple different aspects you want to look at. From a logistics point of view, I'm going to tell you about this cool resource that Anchorage Public Library does. And since we're connected with Anchorage, that means everybody in Juneau has access. And they have what's called book club kits. So they have hundreds of books where they said, oh, people have been asking us to do book clubs. So they bundle 10 of them together and ship them down to the public library here. And you check them out on your card. And then you distribute all of the copies to the people in your group. And so what this means is people don't have to fight over the one or two available copies that are here at the library. Not everybody has to buy a copy. And so that's really nice from a logistics point of view. And so one of the things, it depends on what you want with your book club. So I've seen a couple different types of book clubs. So there's book clubs that are thematically based where people say, you know what, we want to read books about this. We want to read books that are based from a certain time period or from a certain country or by a certain author. And so what brings the group together is the interest in the book. And then there's a different type of book club, which is a group of friends. And these people might probably already know each other, and they say, we want to do something together. And so then they all pick the same book and read it and talk about it. So it's kind of if you're going to set up a book club, you should think about what kind do you want. Do you want a thematic one where you get people who are all interested from all over, or do you want one that is for you and your friends?
Okay. Well, great advice. And if anything you've heard today makes you want to get some more information on these topics, be sure to contact the Juneau Public Libraries. They are here as a wonderful community resource. I want to thank Julie Niederhauser, Andy Hirsch, and MJ Grande for coming in and talking with us today about reading. Thanks so much.
Our favorite topic.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 25th of June, 2015. It was on this day, 1950, North Korea invaded South Korea, beginning the Korean War. Most of the actual combat occurred in the first year of the war. Dwight D. Eisenhower ran for president, 1952, promising to end the war, and when he was elected, that's what he did. It was the first war the United States had concluded without success. There were no celebrations when it ended. More than 3 million people lost their lives. Many years later, an American veteran named Harold Richards wrote, "I was not brave, nor was I a hero in any way. I was just as scared as anyone else under fire. I took part in 5 major battles and 2 invasions. I suffered the cold of North Korea,
along with every GI during the Northern Campaign. There were so many unsung heroes of that war. Only men who were there could understand. Today is the birthday of George Orwell, born Eric Arthur Blair, 1903, in Motihari, British India. He became a policeman in Burma, contracted dengue fever, came to England to recuperate, and there decided to become a writer. He wanted to write about poverty. He began dressing as a tramp, living among the destitute, wrote essays that became his book Down and Out in Paris and London. Joined the Spanish Civil War, got shot in the throat by a sniper in the early 1940s, began work on a novel about a group of farm animals who decide to revolt against their tyrannical owner. Animal Farm was the title of it. And then came the novel 1984, published in 1949, about a man losing his identity while living under a repressive regime. It's the birthday of the children's author and illustrator Eric Carle, born in Syracuse, New York, 1929, author of The Very Hungry Caterpillar. And it was on this day in 1942, Dwight D. Eisenhower became the commander of the U.S. troops in Europe. He'd been in the Army for more than 20 years. He'd never seen combat. All he'd ever done was train soldiers. He'd go on to become supreme commander of the Allied armies in Europe, and he helped plan D-Day. Here's a poem for today by Howard Nemirov, entitled Monet. Unable to get into the Monet show, too many people there, too many cars, we spent the Sunday morning at Bowl Pond, a mile from the museum, where no one was, and walked an hour or so around the rim, beside 5 acres of flowering water lilies, lifting 3 feet above their floating pads, huge yellow flowers, heavy on bending stems in various phases of array and disarray, of petals packed, unfolded, opening to show the meaty orange centers that become, when the ruined flags fall away, green showerheads spilling their wealth of seed at summer's end into the filthy water among small fish, mud-colored, and duck, moving, explorative, through jungle pathways opened among the fronds upon whose surface water drops behave like mercury, collecting in heavy silver coins instead of bubbles, some few red-winged blackbirds whistling above all this once in a while, the silence else unbroken all about. A poem by Howard Nemirov, Monet, from the Selected Poems of Howard Nemirov, published by Swallow Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 23 minutes past the hour. I'm Cheryl Snyder, your host today for a Juno Afternoon. Joining me now in the studio is Roger Radig of the local Red Cross, and by phone we have Celia Jackson of the American Red Cross. Hello to both of you. Celia, you are on the air. So, Celia, do we have you?
Hi, yes.
Terrific. Great. So, Celia, why don't we start with you telling us about the workshops you have coming up.
Yeah, we have planned a 3-day workshop in Juneau. It's in the evening from 9 to 6, and it's all about emergency preparedness and volunteering for the Red Cross and other organizations in Juneau.
Can you give a little bit of detail what sorts of things people will be learning?
Yeah, we have community presentations about what different organizations do in emergencies in Juneau specifically, and what the Red Cross does in Juneau, and what volunteer opportunities are available. We also have a 3-hour shelter exercise that we're doing to show people what it would actually be like to volunteer and do sheltering in their community.
Okay, and what volunteer opportunities are available for people in Juneau?
Yeah, we have a couple different great opportunities. We have a disaster assistance team, and their main function is to assist people who've lost their homes to fires, which happens all the time and is a real need. We also have a disaster workforce team, and they're the people who you see out in the community when there's a big event, like a forest fire or an earthquake, and they assist people through sheltering, feeding, and Safe and Well, which is a family reconnection program. Also, we have preparedness education opportunities to teach children in classes about what to do in disasters, and we have our home fire campaign, where we install smoke alarms in the community to help save lives.
Great. So who do you think is a good candidate for this class?
Well, they have to have the passion to help, to drop everything possibly and assist their community. They just need to have passion. In that care, there's so many different technical specialties that no matter what you do in your real life, we can find you an opportunity to help in the Red Cross with disaster or even in preparedness.
Okay, and is there an age cutoff, like you're looking for individuals 16 and older, or do you work with youth, you know, students younger than that?
Yeah, our age cutoff for independent volunteers is 18, but we do accept youth volunteers with parental consent. And, of course, under 16, you can volunteer with an adult.
Okay. Roger Radig here in the studio. Can you speak to why this kind of training is important for Juneau?
Absolutely. Well, number one is to have a local ready resource for whatever disaster might occur. For example, Celia is quite familiar with the wildfires that are going up in the South Central and the interior. Without folks on the scene and able to immediately respond to set up shelters, which is what we're doing with some of the fire situations, evacuations, having them there, having them trained ahead of time is critical.
So, Roger, what do you think are some of the disasters in Juneau that we need to think about when the city does its disaster planning scenarios? What kind of things are you looking at?
The city has really leaned forward. They have a number of emergency disaster scenario plans publicly available on the internet on the CBJ's website, and they range from the standard house fires, of course, earthquakes, tsunamis, which aren't so much a Juneau concern, but they are a concern for other areas of the southeast. Avalanche, of course, critical to the downtown areas that could wipe out large communities. And there we go with our shelter plans. The city is our call-up person if they have a disaster. Throw out a couple other examples on a large scale. Fire in the Gaston apartments here a little over 2 years ago, about 2.5 years ago. We set up a shelter at the Centennial Hall. And then most recently, just this past winter, when the Glory Hole sprinkler system totally saturated the facility there, we opened up a temporary shelter there as well.
Okay. So this class is going to train, hopefully, many new people to be able to help out if help is needed. Is there refresher courses, or how do people keep their skills sharp until the next circumstance arises that their help is needed?
Well, as Celia mentioned, this class is coming up is a 3-day training event. The first night will be an academics. We're set up for Bartlett Hospital Valiant Center for some academics and some familiarization with the responders. Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT as we know them, the fire department's going to be there and give a little speech. And then Tuesday night, the 7th of July, we're actually going to do that shelter simulation event at one of the local schools and probably utilize their gymnasium. From there on, I mean, we typically have training throughout the year from time to time as we can get enough response for folks that are interested in doing it. there's an absolutely wonderful way to do things remotely, and that's on the internet. It's web-based training. It's all of our training, web-based, and this three-night training event, and our training throughout the year are free to volunteers, so hopefully a good incentive for folks to become Red Cross volunteers, and that includes health and safety classes, first aid, CPR, and AED.
Okay, terrific. So, Celia, maybe you can help let people know, those who are very interested in this topic, but they themselves can't attend the workshop but want to be more prepared in their own home, what sorts of resources could they find online? Where do they access that?
Of course, they can always go to our website, which is redcross.org/Alaska, to find more information about family preparedness. The state also has some really good resources on individual family preparedness, and those are also offered online. And there's just so many resources. The Alaska Preparedness Council is a new organization out of Fairbanks, but we provide information on our Facebook page. And like I said, it's just about being prepared and doing a little research. And, of course, Roger Reddick and the team in Juneau are always available to talk about family preparedness and to give advice.
Okay, terrific. So for those who want to sign up, how do they do it?
Sure. If you go to, and Roger, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's redcross.org/Alaska/Juneau_preparedness. And we also have flyers around town. We're on the community Juneau calendar and a few other places online.
Okay, great. And you can access that calendar from our website, so that could be a quick and easy way to get there.
Yeah, there's quite a few resources, as she mentioned. The Jack calendar has it, and that's the one that you share with KTOO.
Exactly, yep.
There's but if you go to our Alaska Red Cross website, which is, as Celia mentioned, redcross.org/Alaska. It's right on the first page. It's called Get Ready Juneau. And again, that'll be on Monday, the 6th of July, in the evening, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Bartlett Regional Hospital at the Valiant Administrative Center classrooms. And then Tuesday evening, the 7th of July, the school gymnasium, yet to be determined, but I'm anticipating it'll be out in the valley. And then Wednesday, the 8th of July, we're planning on doing a picnic to sort of wrap things up.
Okay, terrific. It sounds great. Thanks so much, Celia Jackson and Roger Raddick, for coming in today and talking with us about this workshop. And we appreciate all that you do to help our community.
Well, thanks for having us and promoting our causes and all nonprofits, including yourself.
Well, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering coffee break service for the office, delivering fresh roasted coffees, brewing equipment, and beverage supplies to offices and businesses around Southeast. Information at heritagecoffee.com.
You are tuned to a Juno Afternoon. It's 36 minutes past the hour. This is Cheryl Snyder, your host for the show today. And joining me now in the studio is James Hoagland with the 4A's and Vicki Wilcox from the Juno Public Health Center. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you two are here to talk about National HIV Testing Day. So, James, why don't you start by filling us in what that is and what that means?
Sure. It's a national event that the CDC sponsors every year just to raise awareness about the importance of HIV testing. The CDC now recommends that everybody aged 13 to 64 have a baseline test done to find out if they have been exposed to the HIV virus.
Okay. And so what is the process here in Juno for people who want to act on that day or this month, or, you know, they want to get tested? How do they go about doing that?
Sure. At the Juno Public Health Center, we offer the HIV testing. We can do it by a blood draw, and you would just make an appointment at the Public Health Center, and then the nurse will call you back with results if it's positive or negative.
And what's the turnaround time from the time you get your blood drawn to the time you get results?
It's, I would say, about 10 to 20 days. It just depends on you know, when you come in and when we have to ship it up to the Fairbanks laboratory. But if it's it is a positive, it's a pretty quick result, and we'll have people who will contact you and then receive counseling.
Okay, yeah. So if someone does get a positive result, what then? What are the resources here in town to work with that?
Sure. So actually, just to backtrack, that is one option to get tested at public health, but you can also get tested at 4A's, and we do an oral rapid test there. It's not a blood draw. It's just an oral swab, and it only takes 20 minutes. So you can come in and see me in the office. You can make an appointment or drop in during office hours and receive the test, and in 20 minutes you'll know your result.
Okay, great. And so, again,
in either whether it's an oral test or a blood test, the next step is a confirmatory test has to be done. And that's just a much more sensitive test that's sent away to a lab to be read to confirm the result. And once that comes back, it's most likely going to be positive as well. There are only very rare exceptions for a false positive test. So then the counseling process starts. You're put in touch with resources from the state who will meet with you and talk to you about treatment and the importance of starting treatment right away to limit the amount of damage that the virus can do in someone's body.
Can someone get treated here in Juno, or do you need to go outside?
You can absolutely get treated here in Juno.
Okay. What does a positive diagnosis today mean compared to 20 or 30 years ago with all of the advancements in treatment options over the last couple decades?
So a positive diagnosis these days indicates that you have a lifelong disease that is chronic, that is not going to go away, that you need to manage. And that's really and truthfully what it comes down to. It is something that is very serious and that requires your attention, but it's not a death sentence as we used to see. Mm-hmm. There are millions of people around the world living with HIV who will never get AIDS. They will live with the virus, and they will die of something else. They're not going to die of HIV as long as they're on treatment.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and maybe you can explain for our listeners the difference between having HIV or testing HIV positive and actually having AIDS.
Right, right. The difference is that HIV is the virus that people get, and in an advanced stage, HIV turns into AIDS. AIDS is the diagnosis that someone would get if they're experiencing symptoms, if they're feeling really sick, and if their immune system has been weakened enough to get those other illnesses.
What's your advice to someone who might be nervous about getting the test because they're afraid of what the test might mean? What do you advise someone?
I would say, you know, do the test. You should know what your status is. It protects you. And as soon as you do know what came a result of negative, then you would receive counseling of how to prevent possible exposure, so you can less your risk of being exposed to HIV. And if you're positive, then you can get meds. That's important. As soon as you start medication, you extend your life.
Great. So really, you know, a way you could frame it for someone that's only positive will come from this, because mm-hmm. if there's something, you have the opportunity to help yourself be healthy.
Absolutely. You know, they used to say knowing is half the battle. And, you know, everyone should know their status. Absolutely.
So are there fees associated with testing at either the 4As or at Public Health?
None with 4As.
Okay. And Vicki?
And at Public Health, there is fees for that. They're very small, limited, but we do offer a sliding fee scale based on your household income. And we do not deny anyone an ability to pay. So if there was a charge and for whatever reasons you weren't able to pay, you cannot. But they're very, it's small fees.
Okay. So, again, this is an awareness campaign you're doing, mm-hmm. building up to National HIV Testing Day, which is June 27th. Of course, people don't all have to flood the offices on June 27th. I'm sure they could come in at any point before or after. And the best way to do that is to make an appointment with you first?
Yeah, that's about the best way.
Okay.
And they can call the office at 586-6089. I'm pretty easy to find online or... You can find my email or on Facebook. Our website is alaskanaids.org. And if you're looking for good information about HIV, if you have questions, the CDC website is fantastic. It's cdc.gov. Super easy to use.
Okay, terrific. Oh, yes,
Vicki. Oh, and Juno Public Health Center, we're open Monday through Friday, and you would call 465-3353 to make an appointment.
Okay. Did we miss anything? Is there anything else you wanted to share today about this?
No, I think just go out and get tested. Definitely good to know.
Yep.
Okay, terrific. Well, Vicki Wilcox of the Juno Public Health Center and James Hoagland of the 4As, thank you so much for all the work you're doing and for coming in and talking to us about it today.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Okay. Thank you.
Possible in part by Juno's own Alaska Pure Mountain Spring Water, available in Juno stores or delivered in 5-gallon jugs to homes and offices. 780-4262.
It's 15 minutes to the top of the hour. This is Cheryl Snyder, your host today for Juno Afternoon. I'm in the studio with Clinton Singletary of the City and Borough of Juno. Hi, Clinton.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So you are here to tell us about Senior Sales Tax Exemption Cards. Tell us what's going on.
Well, beginning June 1, we've been reissuing senior cards for all Juno residents. So we've been set up at either Centennial Hall or the City Hall Assembly Chambers. And we've been asking seniors to come in, show proof of Juno residency, and then we give them a brand new card. So far, we've done almost 3,300 cards, which is right in line with our estimates. We were saying maybe high end 3,500. And there's currently 3 days left to do it this month before the old cards expire.
Okay, and so people need to come down. Can you say the locations again where people can come down to?
Yes, yeah, so tomorrow we're going to be at City Hall in the Assembly Chambers. We can do your new cards there. Monday and Tuesday next week, we're going to be at Centennial Hall in the Hammond Room from 9 to 4.
Okay, and how long does the whole process take?
If there's not a line, which there's been occasions of big lines, we're averaging about 5 minutes per person. So last week and a half, there hasn't been any lines more than 3 or 4 people.
Okay.
So not too long.
Okay, and if they miss these dates, if they can't make it work within, you know, by the end of next week, what then?
So what happens is the old cards are supposed to no longer be valid beginning July 1. So if you go to the store, store's not supposed to allow you tax exemption unless you show the new card. So beginning July 1, you can still come in after the fact and get the new cards, but there just might be that gap between when you have exemption and when you have the new card. So
best to do it in the next week if you can make it happen.
Yes.
Is there any possibility for people to do it by proxy if there's not an opportunity to get it actually into Centennial Hall or at Assembly Chambers?
Yes, we've been working with people mainly for medical reasons who haven't been able to make it. You know, they can't physically come down, and we understand that. So we've got a couple options. We've been working with people to get us the info in so that we can send them a card. So if you think you fit into that for medical reasons, you can call our office and we can work something out with you. So and our office number is 586-5265.
Okay, great. And you know, in this day and age, it's sort of a novelty to actually get to go and do something in person and connect with another human. But
yes.
Is there an online option for those who want to do it that way?
There isn't.
Okay.
We got to have you in person. Main reason we're taking pictures. So.
Getting the IDs done. Okay, so anything else about this you think is important for seniors to know?
Seniors, not so much, but the biggest thing is we're really trying to push the stores to watch that cutoff beginning July 1, only allow the new exemption cards. We've sent flyers out to stores and going with their quarterly returns so that everybody's on notice. So just emphasizing the change beginning July 1.
Okay, so a big heads up to senior citizens. It is time to renew your tax exemption card if you want to keep getting a discount at the cash register after the end of the month. Clinton Singletary, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us about this.
Thanks for having me.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will. One for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. 5% appear too small. Be thankful I don't take it.
It's 10 minutes before the top of the hour. This is Cheryl Snyder, and I am in the studio with Nancy DeCherney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. So what is going on in the arts and culture world?
Well, as always, there's something to do. This evening, there's an open mic night, actually, over at the Alaskan Bar from 9 to 2. There's a painting party at 6:30, Full Moon Rising, out at the Louise Miller Fine Arts Studio. She has regular classes. Sometimes I don't mention them, but you can go on the calendar and find them. There, Friday is Food Truck Friday. It's going to be a wild one.
What's going on? Well, who do you have lined up?
We've got Daughters of the New Moon. Local belly dance
always
group.
Fun, always colorful. Fun,
colorful and, mm-hmm. and exciting. Doug Bedia, his Soul Review, lovely jazz music, and followed by Brian Graceland, who sings gospel music. And as you know, there is the Prayers for Charleston happening out at St. Paul's Church at 6:30 to 7:30. If you can't make that and you happen to be at the Jack, we're going to do a little moment of silence and then go with the gospel music after that for part of that. And plus, I just think there's going to be a whole lot of a little bit of hubbub there tomorrow.
It's just a sense you got, a good vibe about
thing
it.
Coming on, yeah. yeah. There's quite, I know MK is going to be there with a whole, she's going to be our artist at work. We have this thing now where there's live artists, they're doing live music, live painting
yeah.
and stuff. As a matter of fact, Jay Crondell had his painting just sold right out from under him as he was painting it, so
that's great. So is she going to be painting the scene?
I don't know what she's going to be painting, but I know she's going to be there, and quite a few other people. It's one of those spontaneous things you never know.
So, and the food vendors, we've got Happy Camper, and we've got Pucker Wilson's. Those are the ones that are always there. Is anybody else coming in
Copa
for tournament?
Will be there. I think that the cotton candy person will be there, Kai and his cotton candy. And I don't really know. Like I said, it's one of those things where you just stand at the door and see what comes through.
Sounds fun. I'm game.
It is. It's exciting. So don't, you know, it happens every Friday night until through August. So do come down. It's fine for kids to run around and have a good time. So, and I think the weather will be decent. And if it isn't, we have tents and we can be indoors and all that.
And you've got the air in the inside. We can all tuck in under a roof.
Yeah.
So great.
And let's see, at 7 and 10 p.m., we have Maud Carousel with their hashtag First World Problems happening at the Rockwell. There are tickets at maudcarousel.com, and suggest 21 and older.
Yeah, and they were in KXL a little bit earlier. Annie Bartholomew has posted on KXL.org some nice stuff about them. So if you're curious about who they are and what Boylesque is, go to KXL.org.
It's a really fun and local homegrown talent.
Yeah.
So we're happy about that. 10 p.m., the Crown Kings Summerfest out at Suite 907. You can get tickets at the usual places, Hearthside, the Jack, Rainy Retreat. On Saturday from at 10 a.m. to 11:30, the City Museum is offering something called Local Heroes Walking Tour. It's free, but they suggest that you register for it. Starts up at the City Museum and walks around town, and you learn some history about your place. And if you got visitors, of course, that's, you can pretend that you already know this, but you're taking them, whatever.
Do you know if this is an ongoing thing or just special this weekend?
They're going to do it a couple of times, and I think this might be the first one. I can't remember, but it doesn't happen every Saturday. They do have the walking tours going on a regular basis that you can register for online. So if you do have house guests or you just want to have learn a little something
about your own town.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a draw open studio at Canvas at 10 a.m. on Saturday, Alaskans Afield, an outdoor survival thing at Sandy Beach, which the Alaskans Afield, it's something that the state's putting on, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sandy Beach. Go there. Painting party at Louise Miller's. Dan Hobson does his classical guitar in the Gold Room on the weekends. And at 10 a.m. again, we have the Crown Kings. Let's see. Oh, the Canvas is doing a critique thing from noon to 1. I'm not really sure what that is, but sometimes that could be fun.
Okay, that's on Sunday at the Canvas?
That's Saturday.
Saturday, okay. Uh-huh.
Sunday, we have Skate of Emergency from 10 to noon. This is brunch at Rockwell. It's a fundraiser for the roller derby.
Terrific. I think they're trying to raise money for a floor. Is that? I think that's what it's about. Yeah, they're... They need to protect Centennial Hall's floor, so I know that's on their radar.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, well, you can't Got to do it. So help them out. There are always lots of fun, big support in this town for roller girls, so go there. Weekly ukulele jam over at 11 a.m. at T.K. McGuire's The Prospector. 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. evening with the whales. Go whale watching and support the Juno Lyric Opera. It should be beautiful.
Terrific.
And a nice thing. Beatlemania. 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. This is at JDHS. There are tickets at Hearthside, Super Bear, Juno Drug, and Heritage Downtown.
And what is it?
Beatlemania.
Okay. That's all you got to know.
That's all you got to know. On Monday, we have the Tlingit Language Learners at the library, public library at 6 p.m. There's youth classes at the Canvas. There is Toastmasters, 9 p.m. On Tuesday is Builder, the movie at Goldtown. On Wednesday, July 1st, OMG, we get to start a lot of the 4th of July things. There's an old-time jam. The hula folks are doing stuff. On July 2nd, you want to talk about the new old-time?
Yeah, we're really excited about the new old-time Chautauqua.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah. So the Chautauqua, there's 55 members of the Chautauqua coming to town. They arrive on the 2nd, and they have planned lots of different things to do with the Juno community over the handful of days that they're here. And all of it is free, except for the vaudeville show they're doing on the night of the 3rd, and they are very generously offering to donate the proceeds of the vaudeville show to K2, which is totally awesome of them. It's really nice.
Yeah.
But they've got a lot of stuff even outside of that, and a lot of it's free, which is so cool. So on the 2nd, that's sort of the kickoff they're doing at the Douglas Library. There's going to be, starting at 4 o'clock, a community potluck, a chalk drawing contest, and a music jam. So we're hoping lots of people from Juno are going to come together and support that and give them a big warm welcome and bring something yummy to share.
Is there a place where, like I see on my calendar that they've got 10:30 in the morning, they've got a juggling and magic class?
Is that right? I don't have
Mandan
that on.
Hall?
That's interesting. I don't have that on my schedule. I'm looking at K2.org. We've got the full schedule. So you know what? We'll find out more about that.
Yeah, but there's a place to go because, like you said, there's the bubble thing. I've got different times. It's like all kinds of crazy stuff coming.
Okay. So I know for sure at 4:30 on July 2nd is the big kickoff with the chalk drawing, the potluck, and music jam starting 4:30. On July 3rd, there are a bunch of workshops that are happening from 1 until 4. It's like a whole range of stuff. Nancy, I don't know if you've seen the list, but it's everything from like juggling to acrobatics to how to fold a fitted sheet to
how to fold math. Fitted sheets.
Yes.
There's a lot of people that need that.
Yeah, I need that. I need that class. All sorts of great workshops for kids. It's really an awesome range of stuff. And then they've got the vaudeville show, which starts at 7 on July 3rd. It's
which
a
is
really
first
nice,
Friday.
Yeah, and it's a really nice lead into what you guys have going on at the Jack before.
Yes, which is, it's first Friday over there, and then there's going to be, as you say, that fireworks, and then we wake up bright and early on the 4th of July and have pancakes
on the lawn at the Jack, which is fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah, so is where we're building up to the really fun. We should mention that the Chautauqua people are the Flying Karamazov people related
yes,
to those.
Yes, shows. Paul Majid is one of the original founders of
so
the,
you enjoy
or he is
them.
Half of the Flying Karamazov brothers. So,
right.
So a lot of great energy, a lot of fun stuff happening there. Nancy, we got to wrap up the show. We are out of time.
It happens
There's
every time.
So much great stuff happening in Juno. Nancy, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. We'll see you at everything.
Okay, and you can check out the calendar at
jahc.org.
Okay, there you go.
In downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.